Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, a professional magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret. Now, take magic cards. You don't have to be a magician to perform all kinds of amazing card tricks because it works by itself. Have someone take a card, place it back in the deck. Tap the deck, it comes to the top. Put it back in the middle, and it's back on top again. Make two or three piles. Whatever pile they point to, the card is there. Now, for more fun, take the top card, tap it, and it changes to their card. Place it on the bottom, and they all change to their card. Cut the deck, and they're all different again. 6 or 60, you can work TV Magic Cards, a mechanical deck that works all by itself.
It's the Day Player Radio program on 720 WGN. Marshall Brodeen, you know, best remembered for his long-running career as television's Wizzo the Wacky Wizard on WGN-TV's Bozo Circus and The Bozo Show. He started his career as a young magician in his first job as a Chicago magic shop demonstrator. He spent time at the famed amusement park Riverview, the Magic Lounge in Cicero, and as a nightclub hypnotist in Chicago's posh Cairo Supper Club. In the early 1970s, he created and marketed TV magic cards with that famous line, "Most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret." And he sold over 15 million sets to a generation of fans, and now they're back. Although he retired from television almost 20 years ago, that hasn't stopped our next guest from making appearances at magic events throughout the country. Joining us is magician, entrepreneur, actor, and my friend, the legendary Marshall Brodeen. Welcome to the show, Marshall.
Thank you.
Well, I'm thrilled you're here because you are one of the greatest storytellers I have ever met. When did you first discover you had an interest in magic?
Well, I saw a woman magician in school when I was 8 years old in the auditorium, and I thought that was really neat. I wish I could do that kind of stuff. And close to where I lived, there was a shop where they sold magic tricks, and I started buying the magic tricks in there, and then I got connected to magic.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's how it all started. Well, you were barely a teenager, and you started already, you know, with all the magic tricks that you bought at the store. You were doing magic shows for the neighborhood kids, birthday parties, Cub Scout meetings. You already made yourself a well-known act out there.
It was a lot of fun. I was, I think, 16 years old or 15 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, and you hung around the magic shops when you were a kid, and there was a magic shop where the professional shopped, run by Joe Berg, that you visited often.
And that was downtown in the Loop on Dearborn Street, and I used to get down there as much as I could. Then there was also one on Randolph Street, the Chicago Magic Center, and I hit those places all the time.
I bet, I bet. What kind of impression did Joe Berg make on you?
Joe Berg was a very smart guy and had just about every trick you can buy in the market, and I kept going down there to buy my tricks. And then Abbott's Magic, which is still in business in Colon, Michigan. And I used to go to their shop they had in Chicago on Randolph Street. And
with George Kuhn.
George Kuhn, yeah. Right.
And that's where you bought your first famous trick, the Hippity Hop Rabbits, I believe.
That's right, at Abbott's Magic.
What did that trick do? What was the basis?
Well, you have cut out rabbits. One is white, one is black, and you cover them with covers, and they change places. The white one ends up where the black one was, and the other one. And as you do it, you turn the whole thing around, the tube, and the people think that what he's doing is on the back of the black rabbit is a white rabbit, and vice versa. So at the end, the people say, "We know that's done. Turn them around. When you turn them around, one's red and one's yellow."
Everyone's always trying to figure out your acts, aren't they?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, you know, at such a young age, you were pretty entrepreneurial at that time. You decided to have your first professional photo taken once you bought those rabbits to show yourself off as a magician.
Right, right. I remember that.
Yeah, and there was a place called Finer Amusements that you started to hang around with Bobby Bear and George Wilhelm. And you ended up working there for quite some time.
Yeah, I worked there for a couple of years. That was right across from the Oriental Theater in Chicago on Randolph Street. And I was there for several years.
Now, did you do demonstrations as well? I mean, you obviously worked there, but I'm assuming when you work in a magic shop, you got to show how these tricks work.
Yeah, this was a magic shop that in the back had a penny arcade, and one section they sold jewelry and souvenirs and everything. Right up in the front was the magic convention, the magic section, and I would stop people and do magic. And finally, people started coming in there to buy magic, and it lasted a long time.
Well, they started to get to know you as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, then you then got hired by the Treasure Chest, and that was known as Chicago's Magic Center on Randolph in Chicago,
yeah.
And you started demonstrating magic tricks there. Tell me about your experience there.
That was the same place. It used to be on Wabash Avenue, and they moved over to Randolph Street across mm-hmm. the Oriental Theater, and I moved over there with them. And people would come in, and I'd demonstrate tricks. And so,
and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, there was a magician, and a lot of the professionals shop there. So there was a magician by the name of Don Lieberman that came into the store and chatted with you for a little while about some opportunities.
Right.
And he wanted you to stop by and see him when he was at Riverview.
Right. That's exactly right.
And really, that's how you got into there. I mean, there was an opportunity for you to do some magic, and Don told you when you went and visited him that he was looking for a new magician, but at 17 years old, he thought you were a little bit too young.
Right. I went out there, the magician, to see the magician, and the owner said, Dick Beff said he disappeared. So I told him, I'm a magician. He's how old are you? I was 16 years old. He said, well, you're kind of young. I said, well, I'll come out and work for you for nothing. First day or second day and see how I'm doing. And so I left the magic shop and went out there and spent the whole season there. And after that, they took me on the road when they traveled the show around the country on fairgrounds.
Sure. And what was really nice is the owner of the Treasure Chest, he let you go out and do those things in the office.
Exactly. And then yeah. When I got through with that, I went back into that magic center.
Yeah, not a lot of bosses would let you do that. He was a very supportive guy.
Yeah, he was like a second father, really.
Yeah.
Very nice man.
Yeah. And then you were at Riverview. Tell me about your experiences at Riverview. You got all kinds of barker calls and everything that you remember working there.
Yeah. I went out to see a magician called Mickey the Mook at the Freak Show. And I got there, and the owner of the Freak Show says, he's no longer here. He disappeared. I said, what do you mean? He says, the next day he didn't come. All his stuff was gone. And I said, well, you need a magician, don't you? And he said, yeah, I do. I said, I'm a magician. You're a pretty young guy. I was 16, 17 years old. I said, well, I'll come out and do a day for nothing for you and show you what I can do. So he said, come out and do it. So I told the people at the magic shop, and they said, that's okay, Marsh. You love that stuff, so go and do it. When you're through, we'll take you back in the shop. So I went out there and stay there, and they liked the way I talked. So they said, you'll make more money stopping crowds of people with magic and give them a pitch on the sideshow, the Monkey Girl and the Alligator Skin Man and Swords, Waterfire, all those characters. And I stayed there, and then the show went on the road, and he took me on the road as a young fella and went to different states and fairs, you know, fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Did magic there for a while, and then went back to Chicago.
Do you remember some of those pitches when you were at Riverview, what you used to say to people to get people's attention?
Oh, yeah, we had Priscilla the Monkey Girl and Emmett the Alligator Skin Man. They were married, and the Monkey Girl, she was a woman. She had a beard and a lot of hair all over her body. So she was Priscilla the Monkey Girl, covered from the top of her head to the toes of her feet with rough, tough corrugated. No, that's the Alligator Skin Man with long, black, shaggy hair, just like a monkey. Two rows of teeth in the upper jaw like the anthropoid. Eight pouches in the side of her mouth where she could store food for days at a time if necessary. And she was married to the Alligator Skin Man, covered from the top of his head to the toes of his feet with rough, tough, corrugated hide laid out in checks and squares like that of a crocodile. Skin so rough and tough you couldn't penetrate it with the sharpest knife. Sheds his skin twice a year like the crocodile. Keeps his body moist in cold water. Stuff like that.
They sounded like a nice couple, Marshall.
Yeah, they were married.
That's funny. Yeah, well, I was going to say, what were some of the other acts that were there at the show that used to get people's attention for?
Oh, we had the fire and the Swords War. That's where I learned to eat fire and swallow swords. Then we had the four-legged girls. She had the body of her twin sister growing out of the side of her body.
Wow.
It was really strange. And then we had the armless one that did everything with his feet. He'd operate a typewriter, paint with oil colors, thread a needle and sew, shuffle and deal a deck of playing cards. Very strange guy.
That was, I mean, that was really where you cut your teeth, really, in performing in front of live audiences and
exactly,
so forth. I mean,
yeah.
that was a great. How long were you at Riverview? Do you remember?
I was for a whole season, and when the season was over, they took the show on the road, and I talked to my mother and asked her if I could go with it because I was about 17 years old, and she says, yeah. So I went around the country on state fairs all over the country for about 4 or 5 weeks and learned a lot on that.
And the rest is history. Well, we'll talk more about Marshall and his first commercial on television, his run-in with the mob, Wizzo the Wizard, TV magic cards, and much more coming up next. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN.
I get little signals from the stone. People think I don't understand.
I think you're about half stone myself.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking to the legendary magician, entrepreneur, and actor, Marshall Brodeen. Marshall, in 1953, you made your first commercial. It was a 3-minute black and white spot to promote the Treasure Chest Magic Shop, and it was actually right here at the Tribune Tower when WGN-TV was based here in Studio 6A. That experience doing that commercial must have made quite an impression on you.
Yeah, I was very young at that time, too. I think I was around 17. 18 years old at that time, and did the commercial on the Magic Center at 19 West Randolph Street. Tricks, jokes, and novelties. They had a jewelry section and all kinds of different things for sale there. They had a penny arcade in the back of there where people would come in and play the games. And I stayed there for a couple of years, and then I went into Riverview Park at the Sideshow.
Right, and then when you turned 21, you performed magic in many popular clubs. Tell us specifically about this, about Cicero's Magic Lounge, because that was a pretty famed place in the city.
Yeah, at that time I used to go out there. I was only about 18 years old or so, 17 years old. They let me come in the Magic Lounge. At that time, Cicero was wide open. Across the street they had gambling slot machines, and in the back room they had all kinds of card games going, and they had a strip show next to it where the dancers would dance and that, and people would come into the Magic Lounge and I'd do magic and then put on a show at night, two shows a night, and then behind the bar and at the tables I'd do close-up magic, and I stayed there for a couple of years, I believe.
Yeah, and you had some run-ins, obviously, being in Cicero. You had some run-ins with Chicago's most visible mob figures of the day as well.
Yeah, I did. I remember one night, two guys sat down at the end of the bar, and the bartender said, go show those guys a trick. And I had this bird cage with a rubber bird in there, and I'd say, tap the cage 3 times, the bird disappears. He taps it 3 times. He's excited to see the bird. Hey, Tony, you see the bird? What's this bird stuff, you know? And I'll clean it up a little bit. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you hold the cage. And he reaches for the cage, and the cage vanishes just like that, so fast you can't even see where it goes. He says, what are you doing with the cage? What are you asking me for? Ask the magician. He says, where is that cage? I said, it's magic. Hey, Tony wants to know where the cage is. Well, I can't tell him. It's a magic trick. This guy pulls out a gun, hits my head with it, clicks it back, and says, where is that friggin' cage? And that cage came out of my sleep.
I bet it did.
It sure did. And when they left, the bartender says, you know what, those two guys, that one guy's a hitman for the outfit, and they're very dangerous guys. I said, oh, wow. So when they'd come in there once in a while, I'd real fast go across the street and get a cup of coffee.
I bet you did.
Yeah. I'll never forget that guy putting a gun to my head.
Yeah. And you ran into a lot of these figures, obviously, over the years, too. Tell me about the Beacon Inn on South Pulaski that you worked at.
Well, when I worked at the Magic Lounge and stopped working there, they turned it into a strip show and got rid of the magic stuff and everything. And one of the bartenders there opened a place on Pulaski Road called the, what was it called? I forgot.
The Beacon?
Beacon Inn, yeah. And he said, we're going to build the stage in there. Come on in there and work. So I went in there doing magic on the stage and magic behind the bar and everything, and lasted there for about a year and a half.
And that's something, did you do that while you were at the Magic Lounge, or was it after the Magic Lounge?
After the Magic Lounge.
Okay, okay. Yeah. And that was things that you would actually stand up, and I saw pictures of this in your book, and your book that's still out there, The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen, pictures of you really just hanging out with the bar patrons at the bar, behind the bar, in front of the bar, just doing magic for folks. I mean,
magic
which
behind the bar, yeah. I'd go to the tables and behind the bar, do tricks at the behind the bar.
Quite a nice interactive experience for people coming in there. It was a nice draw.
Yeah, I'd see people come in and go over and do some tricks and go to someone else and go to the tables and do tricks. And then a couple of times a night I'd go on stage and do some magic and I'd eat a little fire and go down at the bar and people would light their cigarettes with the fire coming out of my mouth.
Oh, man.
And then I start swallowing swords for a while, like a sideshow in there. And it was a very interesting place to draw a lot of people.
Sure. I'm sure. Well, in the late 50s, in 57, you were drafted.
I was drafted in the Army.
Yeah. And, you know, even that didn't stop you because during that time when you were at Fort Carson and even beyond, you were entertaining, you know, troops. You were entertaining the higher-ups, the higher-ranking officers.
Right.
I mean, you really turned it into a show there, too, so you could keep your skills going.
Right. I was put into special services. And I worked out of a theater there, and we'd go out and do shows at different places, Army shows for the Air Force there, but there was an Air Force deal there, and just did shows at the service clubs, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then while I was working there, we got to know people in town at the hotels, and we could go out and make money on the side of the hotels doing shows for conventions and stuff, and they let us do it because we were assigned to a theater there, which that was our spot we worked out of.
Now, when you're in the service, did you get paid for something like that? Or were you in the service? It was kind of free entertaining the troops.
Free in the service.
Yeah.
Go in town and make some money on the side.
Wow.
So it was a lot of fun. I had a good time in the Army. And then one time, the commanding general of 5th Army, a 3-star general, came in, and they said, we want you to go over to the service club. And the commanding general of the U.S. Continental Army Command and this other 3-star general and the 4-star general were there. And I did close-up magic at their table after I put on a show. And they just loved it. And a guy from Chicago said, you know, I want to take you back to Chicago when I go. I want you to do a show at Fort Curtis and Fort something out on the north side. And I said, are you serious? He says, yeah. He said, pack everything you up and everything. And we'll take you out to his plane there, and they flew me into Chicago. And they said, we won't need you until Saturday. So I went to my mother's house there and took all my stuff. And then they came, picked me up, and I went out to Fort Sheridan and to the general's house there and did my magic.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you really, when you were at a young age, your teens into your 20s, I mean, you really cut your teeth in all this, and you worked hard. You worked hard to
I was really lucky, as what it was, really. And then when I got at the Fort Carson, when I got to Chicago, I was supposed to go back to Carson, you know, fly back there. And the general said, no, I want you to stay around Chicago. We might have you do some stuff here for the Navy and all these other different places.
How cool is that?
How cool, and then I could live at home. And
yeah, right.
They need me.
Yeah.
Yeah, pick me up in the car and take me out there where I'm doing the shows, take me back home. And sometimes I'd be home for 2-3 weeks before they call me for something.
Yeah, how nice is that?
It couldn't be better. There's no war going on or anything.
Sure. Sure. Well, around that time, too, when you got out, you started getting a little bit into hypnosis. What got you interested in that?
Well, I was working a place I got to do hypnosis before I went in the Army. I was working in a nightclub on Pulaski Road, the Beacon Inn, and a guy came in there and loved magic. He says, I'm a hypnotist. And I said, really? Can you hypnotize people? And he did some hypnosis. And I said, I'd love to learn that. He said, I'd love to learn magic. So we got together, and he taught me how to hypnotize, and I taught him magic. And when the next couple of days, I went up on the stage and tried it, and I started hypnotizing people at the Beacon Inn. They put a sign on hypnotist and magician. From there, I was drafted in the Army and went into special services. I was hypnotizing people in basic training and all that stuff and got around, and they took me out of the basic training and put me into the special services.
You were always hungry for knowledge. I mean, you know, you had a lot of mentors in your life coming along the way. And
yeah, very lucky.
Yeah, very lucky. But, you know, it's just you were always hungry, and I think that's what has made you such a success as well.
And then when I came out of the Army, across the street from where I lived on North Avenue, there was a place called the Tiffin Inn. And I walked over to the guy, and they music there and the comedians. I said, I'm a magician hypnotist. He says, I'll try you some weekend. So he tried me, and he liked me. So he put me in there, and I was working there 5 nights a week, and Saturdays, and off on Sunday and Monday. And I was there for about a year, and he got in trouble with the government. So they closed him up, and the landlord gave me the place for nothing.
Really?
You give him $500 a month, and I'd own the place. So now I owned a nightclub and called it the Mystic Club. Did magic and hypnotism behind the bar, and I had a band in there, and I stayed there for about a year and a half, and I couldn't stand running a place and entertaining.
Yeah, you know, that's a whole different thing altogether. There's one thing to be able to go out there and entertain and figure all that out, and then there's a whole other thing to actually run a business at the same time.
Without a doubt. When I took it over, and you got bartenders stealing from you and waitresses and all that stuff.
Sure.
All kinds of trouble, you know.
Yeah. Well, then after that, you spent some time entertaining at the Cairo Supper Club. Tell me a little bit about the Cairo.
That one, I went to the Cairo. They had three different hypnotists. There were Dr. Mike O'Dean, Dante, and one other one. I forgot his name. And that was my dream, to work the Cairo Supper Club. That was on Sheridan Road in Irving Park. So the guy came in and saw me one time, and he said, man, you do a great job. And Ted Boyer and Dr. Mike O'Dean, they went to Las Vegas. He said, I'd like to put you in there. And that's after I sold the place to someone. So I left there. I was at the Mystic Club, and then I went into the Cairo Supper Club on Sheridan Road, Irving Park. And I stayed there for a couple of years until it was bombed.
Until it was bombed, did you say?
I was on TV one morning, and I said to my wife at that time, I'm out of a job. They threw a bomb, and it was a beautiful place, and bombed the place.
Wow.
So I was out of business there. Hugh Hefner came in and saw me, invited me to his house, and I did some hypnotic stuff and all that stuff, and he called me in his offices and says, how would you like to work the Playboy clubs around the United States?
Yeah, what kind of offer is that? That is phenomenal. Look at that.
You know what I said to him? Huh. Oh, God, would I love to do that. And I had the same thing with Vegas, the Frontier Hotel. I had an agent come in and wanted to take me to Vegas. I said, I just got married, and how do I go to the Playboy clubs all over the country?
Yeah. Says, that would be hard to explain, I would think.
He says, take your wife with. I said, are you serious?
Yeah, right.
I said, I can't do it, so I didn't do it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Coming up next, Marshall's first appearance as a magician in the center ring of WGN-TV's Bozo Circus, his nearly 30-year stint as Wizzo the Wizard, elevating Bill Cosby, and much more with Marshall Brodeen when we get back. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking with magician and Chicago television's legendary Marshall Brodeen. So, Marshall, Bozo Circus was a showcase for performers and magicians appearing in the center ring 5 days a week at noon on WGN television. And Howard Schultz, he was a theatrical agent, he booked you on the show in January of 1962, just 4.5 months after the show premiered.
That's right.
And that must have been exciting, a different opportunity. What did you think about doing a children's show?
Oh, I thought it'd be great, so I went on there as a magician. And what I did, I put tricks together to where I could use the characters in the show, you know? And they liked that, and that was the first time they had a magician on that did some stuff with the characters, plus the other magic. So they brought me on more than they usually bring an act on. They bring me, like, once a month, and then two times a month, and then I did a show for the at McCormick Place for a company where they put me in a wizard costume. It was a don't buy foreign products and all that.
Yeah, it was 1968. It was for the American Gas Association.
Exactly.
And it was the Arabian Nights theme for the entire event.
Exactly. And they gave me the, you know, they let me have the costume, and when I left, I showed it to Don Sandberg, who was a producer of the Bozo Show.
And Sandy the Tramp.
Mm-hmm. Sandy the Tramp. And he said, why don't you wear that on the show? We'll call you the wizard, you know. And I went out there, and I started getting crazy with the magic. And they said, we've got to do it again. So I did it like 3 weeks in a row, and people loved it. And that was it. And about a month went by, and Sandberg called me. He said, we're getting so many calls. When is the wizard coming back? I said, really? He said, yeah, how would you like to work it once a week? You know, one day a week. I said, I'd love to do that. So I would get paid a good price because I'd pay as a net gets on there, you know.
Sure.
So four times a month for about 2 months. And it was going over so good, they said they want to hire me as a regular on the show.
That's amazing. And that was about the same time, too, that, you know, Ray Rayner was leaving the show and so forth. Yeah, and Roy Brown,
I was with him for a while, and then he left.
Yeah, Roy was, you know, he was a puppeteer on Garfield Goose, and he joined the cast as Cookie the Cook. And, you know, you guys had a pretty good friendship over the years. Well, later that year, that's first year that you started with Bozo Circus, you know, Bob Bell, and not too many people know this, he suffered an aneurysm, and he was off the show for nearly 6 months. So
right.
At that time, you were doing the show 5 days a week. I mean, you were really filling those big shoes.
Right. That was fun. So tiresome, you know.
I bet. Oh, I bet.
Different bits to do with magic. So it turned out pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when I was a kid growing up, and I was born in 67, when I would watch Bozo Circus as a kid, you know, I swear when the show opened would happen and I knew that you were going to be on the show and I saw you appear, I knew it was going to be a pretty kick-ass show. You know, I knew it was going to be a great show. Tell me a little bit about working with Bob Bell.
Bob Bell, working with him was great. He was a great performer and a very nice man and really, you know, did a great job and was really into what he did. He was really Bozo, you know. Same with Cookie. He was great. He was a super performer. It was a good show.
Well, you had the Stone of Zanzibar that you made, that you kind of found in the store, and I know you know, Bob had all kind of double entendre little jokes that went over the kids' heads right to the adults, and he talked to you about that stone one day.
Oh yeah, I walked up to him to touch you with the Stone of Zanzibar, and he said, "I remember when you got stoned at the Zanzibar." And he knew how far he could go, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Sometimes he'd really break you up.
Yeah, sure. You know, and it was every day, it was, you know, you got an outline for the show pretty much. I mean, there wasn't really any script, so to speak. I mean, you would pretty much go off the top of your head and play within these skits. And so that must have been just a pretty incredible experience.
It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Did you feel comfortable doing that without a script and just kind of lamming it along the way? Because that's kind of how you performed over the years, right?
Yeah, right. It was fun. I had a lot of lines to had to be in it, and I'd do them, but I do a lot of ad-libbing, too, and they liked it. They said it was okay.
Well, you were, you know, there was the Three Bears sketch that was probably the most.
I'll never forget the Three Bears because Bob Bell was on. He knew how far he could go in saying things.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the Three Beds there. I'm Mama Bear.
Right.
And he's Papa Bear and Cookie's Baby Bear. So we walk into their place there and where our beds are, and Cookie, someone's been sleeping in my bed. And then I go on, I say, Papa, someone's been sleeping in my bed. Well, don't look at me. Anybody who sleeps deserves what they get. And the audience goes crazy. You know?
Of course. Because, yeah, I mean,
you really had fun with it, yeah.
Well, you were really talking to the adults, too, which is what really made it so... So incredibly special. And, you know, even while you were on the show, you still entertained and did stage shows and stuff as Marshall Brodeen, but you also toured with your good friend Roy Brown as Cookie.
Oh, a very good friend. We became friends, and I lived in a building in Roselle, and he got divorced and everything, and I said, well, I got an empty apartment there. You can take it. And he took the apartment, so we drive together to work and back on that.
You worked on the show daily, and then in 1994, you finally decided to retire. And, you know, the show was no longer going to be on 5 days a week, but you still continued to make special appearances as Wizzo up till the final show in 2001.
Yeah, right.
You know, there was a famous story that happened. It was actually right around the time that you were getting involved with Bozo Circus. You made an appearance on the Mike Douglas show, and you performed with comedian Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I did three appearances on there, once with Bob Cosby and one with Tony Bennett and Louie Nye. And I was on there three times. But Bill Cosby was great. He was a great guy to work with.
Did you hypnotize him?
No, I did hypnosis, but not real hypnotism. Once I did hypnosis on the show, but one time I did illusions, and I pretend to hypnotize him, and I put him between two brooms his feet on one broom upside down, you know, and his head on the other, and then I take it away and I'm floating him in the air. And I put a hoop through it, you know, all the way through. showing him he's floating in the air. And he says, I says he could remain there on the balloon for hours if necessary. And he opens his face, not really, man, you know. He did a lot of ad-libs that were very funny on that. And I took him down off that and did some other things with him.
Well, I'll tell you, Marshall Brodean, he's not only a magician and actor, but also a successful entrepreneur. We're going to talk about TV magic cards and their return when we return. It's Dave Player on 720 WGN.
Hi, I'm Marshall Brodean here at the Frontier Hotel in Las Vegas with the superstars of magic, Siegfried and Roy. And now Siegfried and Roy bring you Pocket Magic, mystifying tricks you can perform anytime, anywhere. Make coins vanish into thin air. Put Mama Rabbit in one hand, Papa in the other. Like magic, they're both together. Take Mama and Papa, and now you have the whole family. Place a quarter on top of the box. Cover it with any card. Tap it, and the quarter jumps inside the box. Have someone pick a card. Place it back in the deck. Put the deck inside the box. And their card mysteriously rises out of the deck. And now you can carry these tricks in your pocket and be ready to perform magic at any time. The Siegfried and Roy Pocket Magic comes with everything you need, including easy-to-follow instructions to perform all of these amazing tricks.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Chicago television legend Marshall Brodean. And so, after all those years selling magic tricks and kits, in 1969, you signed an advertising contract with WGN to promote your own creation, which was TV magic cards. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I used to go to state fairs, and I'd see these guys pitching the magic cards. They called it Svengali, the magic deck, and they would sell them like crazy. And I said, why couldn't a guy go on television and, you know, sell them like crazy? So I talked to him down at GN. I wanted to buy time on there. So we did it. We made a commercial up at when the Bozo show was over one time. They kept the cameras running, and I changed my clothes real fast and went out and did a commercial where you send $2 to Magic Cards, Fox Lake, Illinois. So I shot that commercial, and I ran it on WGN and paid for time, you know. And all of a sudden, after the first, second day, two or three orders come in. I'm going, oh, my God, we went on two, 3 days.
Right.
What's going on here? And then later it got more and more and more. We did a couple more commercials, and all of a sudden they come in bags full of letters to send them magic cards.
Well, yeah, by the second week of commercials, you sold nearly 800 sets. By the third week, you were up to 3,000 sets. That must have blown you away.
Yeah, and then an agency called Eichhoff and Company in Chicago called me and says, you know, you've got a great product. You should be all over the country in every store there is. And the Guttermans, who own CLR and Tarnex and all that, they called me up and said, we can get you in every store in the country, in California, all over Walgreens, and talked to them, and all of a sudden I made a deal with them, and I went nationwide with them, and we sold probably a million decks of cards throughout the years.
So there was it was a Svengali deck, so it was a deck that you had used in the past, and you just developed it really for yourself.
Yeah, and they used to pitch it as Svengali decks at state fairs and stuff. Well, I call it TV magic cards.
Sure.
TV. And we sold a lot of cards, and it was fun. Then later I come out with a magic set.
Yeah, 1972, and I'll tell you, I that was my first magic set, and I still have parts and pieces of that.
Exactly.
I got to tell you, oh, absolutely, I do. I've still got my magic wand. I've still got that little pop-up pad. I've got the whole nine yards. But that was when I got that set. That taught me how to, you know, what it did. It's not only taught me magic, and I'm sure millions of other kids as well, but it gave them some confidence to actually like perform and speak in front of other people as well.
Yeah, right. Did very, very well.
You went on to create magic tricks for other well-known magicians as well.
I knew Lance Burton, so I put out a magic set for Lance Burton, and we ran it on TV and sold a lot. And then I met Siegfried and Roy, and I put together a real big set, Siegfried and Roy magic set, with a lot of stuff in it, and a deck of cards, TV magic cards, no, the Siegfried and Roy magic cards, and that went real big. Sold them all over the country. All the big stores took them because it was Siegfried and Roy. You know, like the
sure.
You had them in Walgreens and all these big stores.
Yeah, it was national, and it just the exposure that you got. And I knew about this and learned about this, about maybe it was a little less than 10 years ago, I had the pleasure of, you know, you have a museum in your basement, and
yeah,
it is absolutely incredible. And it covers different parts of your life. It covers, you know, the history of magic in general. It covers Riverview. It covers your time on Bozo Circus. But the room that I found most fascinating, that blew me away, was all the magic kits over almost a 40-year time period that you not only created as a Marshall Brodeen set, but for other magicians besides Siegfried and Roy and Lance Burton across the country. I mean, you have a room filled with packaging and so forth. And that's really what, you know, made you this incredible success, was your entrepreneur thoughts about expanding your business.
Yeah, it was great, especially when David Copperfield and Lance Burton got those sets. That's how they started. In fact, we were out there just a few months ago and mentioned they started with the TV magic sets. Can you believe that?
Yeah, right, exactly. Well,
I said to them, why aren't I here in Vegas?
You're right.
And they start laughing.
Yeah. Well, they're available again, and that's what's pretty exciting. You can buy them at Amazon.com, and if you're visiting the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago, you can not only see Marshall's Wizzo costume in the Bozo Circus exhibit, but the museum store also has not only TV magic cards, but your magic sets, because those are back as well.
Yeah, right.
But back to your museum in the house, you know, you have, you know, your walls are filled with photos of you and Bill Cosby, Steve Martin, Muhammad Ali, David Copperfield. It's amazing the people you have met throughout the years. Your first room that you really introduce people to is really magic itself in the history. What are some of the artifacts that you have in the history of magic?
I've got a lot of posters of different magicians mm-hmm. in the past, like Keller and Houdini and Thurston, Blackstone, and stuff like that. I have a lot of those. And then I have some, you know, a couple paintings of Jack Gwynn, who is a famous magician.
And then you have a whole Riverview room where you actually have all the penny slots and so forth. How did you get a hold of those when Riverview closed? Is that just something you bought?
Companies that were selling them. I guess some of these companies bought them up, and I've got the few of the machines down there, and I got some slot machines in my office up here, real old ones from the past.
Going down memory lane, you've won Emmy Awards, you've won Magic Awards like the Merlin Awards, and about a year ago you were given the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences the prestigious Silver Circle Award for all the time that you spent not only on Bozo but all of your magic commercials and so forth. What did that award mean to you?
Oh, it was great. I was surprised. Yeah, it was the Chicago Midwest chapter of the National Academy of
Arts and Sciences.
Television Arts and Science. I got a nice plaque from there. And then I got, at that time, I got a letter from the governor of the state of Illinois and from the mayor of the Chicago.
Well,
I got letters right here in my office, and all the people there that night.
Well, you've talked about so many of the people that were mentors to you in these magic shops and these magicians that took you along the way. And I know you're a very humble guy, but you also have been a mentor to so many up-and-coming magicians. You have always taken the time to spend time with them like others have given you.
Oh, yes, I do. I enjoy talking with them.
These are all the people that looked up to you, not only locally but nationally, as, I mean, you become a world-renowned magician, and what an incredible career that you've had, and what a pleasure it has been to spend some time with you today.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for calling and getting over to me. That was really great.
All right. Thank you for sharing your life stories with us. And TV Magic Cards and Marshall's TV Magic Show are available again at Amazon.com. Nostalgic Toys. That's Nostalgictoys. Nostalgictoys.com. And if you're visiting the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago, the museum store sells them both as well. And his book, published several years ago, The Magical Life of Marshall Brodeen, it's really an interesting read about his career. And we only gave you a few tidbits here. That's also available at Amazon.com. The legendary Marshall Brodeen. Thanks again, pal.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
All right. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN.